And the latest development, at least 5 Palestinians have been killed in an attack on a civilian gathering in the north of Gaza City. The Israeli regime has committed 4 massacres within 24 hours, killing at least 81 civilians. Nearly 200 others have also been wounded. The Gaza Health Ministry says a strike on a fuel station at the Al-Mawasi refugee camp in southern Gaza has left 17 people dead. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent, another strike simultaneously hit the UN-run Razi school in the Nusraya refugee camp in central Gaza. That attack killed 25 people. The death toll since October 7th is nearing 38,800. More than 89,000 Palestinians have also been injured. The genocide has forced 90% of Gaza's 2.4 million people to flee their homes. Palestinian officials in Gaza say the 72-day-long closure of the Rafah crossing by Israel has taken a heavy toll on patients in the blockaded territory. The government media office says 292 patients have so far died because they couldn't leave Gaza to seek treatment. The media office said over 3,500 patients and injured people have been unable to receive necessary treatment outside Gaza. It added that the total of 25,000 Palestinians and patients need treatment outside the territory. The media office warned that Gaza's health ministry is in critical state after Israel attacked and a dozen hospitals out of service. It also said that 500 medical personnel have been so far killed and 310 others have been injured or abducted by the regime forces. The office said Israel and its main backer, the United States, are fully responsible for the continued closure of the Gaza crossings, and it called on the international community to take action to mount pressure on Israel and the U.S. and open the crossing. Our correspondent in Gaza has interviewed a doctor at the Al-Ada Hospital. Let's take a listen.
From the first day of this war until now, we received every day a lot of murders, a lot of injuries, a lot of cases in our hospital at Al-Ada in Al-Nusayrat camp. Every day we received injured people with suffering from critical cases. We have a leak of hospital supplies and medical equipment at our hospital. Also, the medical staff are suffering from fatigue and execution. Until now, we will continue our work at our hospital, but the leak of equipment and the leak of medical supplies are completely suffering in our hospital.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says at least 8 schools have been targeted by Israeli strikes in Gaza during the past 10 days. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini says 6 of the agency's schools were among those targeted across the blockaded territory. He added that hitting schools by Israel has become an almost daily occurrence and that it has robbed Gazan boys and girls of their childhood and education. The UN official stressed that the blatant and constant disregard of international humanitarian law continues unabated in Gaza. His comments came just a day after Palestinian Education Ministry said Israeli strikes have killed over 9,100 students in Gaza since last October. More than 14,600 students have been injured and over 600,000 students have been also barred from enrolling in school since the Israeli genocide started in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a new retaliatory operation against an Israeli target and the occupied Palestinian territories. The umbrella group said they used drones to hit vital targets in Umm al-Rasha port, also known as Eilat. The Iraqi resistance hit the operation, and this came as a response to Israel's massacre of Palestinians in Gaza, according to women and children. The elderly also have vowed to continue retaliatory operations against the regime's targets. Earlier, Iraqi resistance drones had targeted a major U.S. military base in western Iraq. According to local media, explosions were heard from the Ain al-Assad air base in Anbar province. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has been conducting operations to support Palestinians since the Israeli regime began its genocidal war on Gaza last October. The Palestinian envoy to the UN says the Israeli Prime Minister does not care about anything but his own political survival. Addressing a UN Security Council meeting on Gaza, Riyad Mansour questioned the Council's role in stopping, quote, the lunar Prime Minister.
But Netanyahu does not care about Palestinian lives or even the hostages' life. He does not care about international law or human decency. He only cares about his own political survival. So what will you do to ensure he is not the one calling the shots? And here I'm talking to you, the Security Council. What are you going to do in order to stop this lunatic from continuing this genocidal war against the Palestinian people?
Mr. President, in recent weeks...
The Palestinian envoy added that Israel has been unapologetically breaching all human rules and principles and defied all demands for an end to the Gaza genocide. He emphasized that the ongoing events in Gaza constitute the most recorded genocide in history, stressing that Israel's cruel nature is evident to anyone willing to see. The Palestinian envoy added that Israel is openly and repeatedly committing decades-long crimes against Palestinians because it believes it can get away with it. He further noted that the regime is using starvation and dehydration as an ultimate weapon against those who have survived the collective punishment in Gaza. In the meantime, the Russian foreign minister, who chaired the UN meeting, said Washington's unconditional support for Israel is only prolonging the genocide in Gaza.
By providing diplomatic cover for Israel's actions and supplying arms and ammunition, Washington, it is clear to everyone, became a direct accomplice in the conflict, just as it has done with the situation in Ukraine. If the U.S. were to end its support, the bloodshed would stop, but the U.S. is either unwilling or unable to do so. What matters to them, it seems, is not saving human lives, but very...
Lavrov said the escalating conflict in the West Asia region is only a direct result of Washington's ineffective policies. He added that U.S. maneuvers regarding Gaza are all directed at scoring more points in upcoming presidential race, not saving civilian lives in the ongoing genocide. He called on the international community to establish a sovereign Palestinian state, saying that is the only way to protect Palestine's fundamental rights. Lavrov stressed the future of the post-war Gaza, which must be decided by Palestinians themselves. Iran's acting foreign minister says the only path to peace in Gaza is an immediate and permanent end to the ongoing Israeli genocide. Ali Bagheri Kani held the UN Security Council responsible for failing to act decisively against the Israeli crimes.
The only way to restore peace is to put an immediate, complete, and permanent end to the occupation, aggression, and crimes committed by this regime. The UN Security Council has the responsibility to achieve this goal, and regrettably, the inaction and inability of the Security Council over the past nearly 8 years has emboldened the Israeli regime to commit more crimes against the oppressed people of Palestine.
Iranian minister urged the UN body to rectify its past failure and fulfill its legal and political human duty. Baghdadi Kani blamed the United States in particular for the UN's failure to address the Palestinian crisis, citing repeated U.S. vetoes to anti-Israel resolutions. He said Washington has been a permanent accomplice in Israel's crimes through comprehensive financial, military, and intelligence support. The foreign minister also renewed Iran's call on the UN Security Council to take decisive measures to end the Israeli genocide and ensure rapid and unhindered entry of aid into the fully blockaded Palestinian territory. And a press conference about Israel's brutal war on Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there was scheduled to be held in the Italian Parliament. It was called off following pressure from Italy's government on the opposition lawmakers. The far-right ruling party says the conference was cancelled because figures banned the Israeli regime would have attended.
A press conference regarding the Gaza massacre and the dire humanitarian situation there and in the West Bank was called off following Israel's pressure on the Italian far-right ruling party, Brothers of Italy. The initiative had been scheduled at Italy's Chamber of Deputies to denounce the Israeli massacre of displaced people in Gaza and the Israeli settlers' growing violence against Palestinians in the West Bank. The press event was cancelled after Brothers of Italy's prominent lawmaker Giovanni Donzelli said that one of the attendees, Shawan Jabarin, who is the general director of a Palestinian human rights organization in the West Bank, belongs to an NGO banned by Israel for alleged links to terrorism.
Israel doesn't represent all Jews over the world. That's the case. And nothing in relation to Jewish or anti-Semitism, but I think the ideological, the political newspapers and the groups, or let me say research centers, they use that for political reasons. They're trying to silence anyone criticize Israel.
The cancellation of the press conference at the Italian Parliament goes beyond a smear campaign against a Palestinian who runs a human rights organization in Ramallah. During the press conference, lawmakers from a number of opposition parties, including the Democratic Party, the Five Star Movement, and the Green and Left Alliance, were supposed to discuss what role Italy could play in Gaza in view of a ceasefire and the recognition of the Palestinian statehood by Rome.
Because of this pressure, Italy cowardly abstains from voting in favor of crucial UN ceasefire resolutions and Palestine statehood-related resolutions. It's not just that. Another result of this pressure on our government is that Italy continues to provide weapons to Israel, fueling the killing of tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Palestine. We don't want to be accomplices of terrorism and criminal policies. Italy must play a significant role in recognizing Palestine as a state.
The press conference with Italian lawmakers and Shawan Jabarin has been postponed to a later date.
The Italian government has maintained a stance of unconditional support for Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. However, public opinion surveys have consistently shown that a large number of Italians are opposed to the ongoing Gaza massacre and its impact on the civilian population there. Max Civili, Rome.
Members of the Islamic movement have joined other Muslims around the world to commemorate Ashura. Benjamin Abdullahi A center report from the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
The ceremonies began with the traditional chest beating to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his 72 loyal companions by the army of Yazid. The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, delivered a lecture where he emphasized the need for Muslims to turn mourning into resistance against oppression. Sheikh Zazaki said Imam Hussein was martyred in the fight against oppression. The Imam meant to save Islam from corruption. Zazaki asked the oppressed people of Gaza and around the world to have confidence in victory.
Our resistance should have no bounds. That means one has to be ready to sacrifice everything, including his own life. But it will be a little matter of little time. It will, in the end of the day, it will triumph. We have seen how Imam Hussein, because he has sacrificed his life, his legacy now has created a revolution.
Members of the IMN later marched through the streets, mourning and chanting elegies and eulogies of Imam Hussein while condemning the Israeli massacre in Gaza. The Ashura procession was cut short due to the imminent threat of an attack from the police. The mourners ended the ceremonies with a message for all the conscientious people around the world.
Wherever there is tyranny and oppression, it is mandatory for those who believe in God Almighty to stand against this tyranny and oppression. At this point in time, tyranny and oppression is everywhere, especially in the Middle East. When you go to Gaza, you see the definition of tyranny and oppression.
The mourners here say the martyrs of Karbala had sacrificed their lives to stand against oppression and to protect Islam. They say today it is also necessary to protest against tyranny and injustice, especially the Israeli cruelty against Palestinians. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The genocide of Palestinians since October 2023 has made the ongoing mutilation of Palestinian society painfully apparent to new generations. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, mutilation means to severely cut off one part of the body from the rest, to disintegrate a part from the whole, but also to leave a mark of violence on the whole, where every look at the mutilated body invokes the memory of violence and inspires terror. Mutilation also impacts the perception or purpose of the body. If a book has been cut through using scissors, it remains a book, and yet it cannot be read in the same way prior to mutilation. Perhaps the intention of mutilating a book is precisely so that it cannot be read. The history of mutilation, therefore, is the history of suffering and the experience of violence that intends to change the existence of the object or subject. The Zionist regime is a child-killing regime which privileges Zionist citizens of the regime based on fictive ethnic roots and grants them extraordinary carceral control over native Palestinians. Such a regime racially oppresses a subordinate group through invisibilization, spatial stigmatization, and what the German filmmaker Hitro Sterel described as the design of killing, an extensive and planned amalgamation of military and technological force, perversion of law, and population transfer. Since October 2023, the Zionist regime military assault against Gaza and its inhabitants has revealed another strategy that the Zionists have long had, the mutilation of Palestine, which dates back to the early 20th century. In the context of Palestine, mutilation holds multiple semantic connotations. Mutilation was cartographic, as the land was torn apart in 1948 and split into the territories of the illegal Zionist entity, with the West Bank, Gaza, and East Al-Quds being externally occupied. The mutilation was also historical, as post-1967 West Bank and Gaza had schizophrenic dissimilarities. Their histories evolved through checkpoints and sieges, respectively, and yet the Palestinians here were forced to live separate and almost unconnected lives. At the same time, the ethno-national regime maintained control over Palestinians with the sole aim of racial domination, irrespective of territory. The mutilation continued with the Israeli annexation and occupation of the three territories in 1967. Mutilation was rhetorical, with then Prime Minister Golda Meir claiming in 1969 that there was no such thing as Palestinians, which aimed to delegitimize Palestinian history and existence on the land. The 700,000 Palestinians who had been displaced were called present absentees, so that the Jewish National Fund could acquire their houses. Mutilation was topographical, for the ethno-national regime uprooted native olive trees to plant pine trees that mimic a more European landscape. It replaced Arabic names of towns with Hebrew ones. It dissected Palestinian farmlands through a snaking separation wall in the West Bank and segregated roads for Israeli and Palestinian use. Ethnic studies scholar Jasper K. Puar observes that the Zionist regime has traditionally held the right to maim Palestinians, arguing that the ethno-national regime possesses powers beyond what the French philosopher Michel Foucault conceptualized as the biopolitical power of the regime. Ethnic studies scholar Jasper K. Puar claims that the Zionist regime has traditionally held the right to maim Palestinians, arguing that the ethno-national regime possesses the bi-political power of the regime, or in other words, deciding who gets to live or die. Mutilation enables the ethno-national regime to partially destroy, incapitate, or retain the power of the one who remedies. In Sleep It Off, Dr. Scott, a short story in Bahasma Galani's 2019 collection of dystopic science fiction, Palestine Plus 100, writer Selma Dabbagh images the Gaza of 2034. The narrator, Leila Watan, is a resident of Gaza and confesses to spying on an inspirational scientist, Mona Kamal, who created 3D printed limbs for disabled people and built a robotic army. The narrator agrees to spy on Kamal to get a job at the scientific enclave, implying that Gaza in the future is still reeling from economic devastation. Through narrative techniques, the effects of mutilation are converted into empowering scientific experiments yet carry the deep trauma of loss. Rita Sacker, a scholar of postcolonial and global literatures, observes that physical dismemberment forced writers like Atef Abu Saif, who wrote the drone It's With Me, a Gaza diary, to invent a new narrative from combining testimony, prose, poetic war memoir, and socio-political study. Mutilation forced Abu Saif to invent what experts call an inverted metonymy, as opposed to metonymy, where a part refers to a whole. The whole disintegrates to give meaning to parts. The exploding buildings are synonymous with Palestinian bodies, and narratives are used for literary invention when the reality is too horrible to bear the weight of trauma. The genocide of Palestinians since October 7, 2023, has made the ongoing mutilation of Palestinian society painfully apparent to new generations of youths, students, and workers of the world. In a disproportionate retaliation to the Al-Aqsa operation, the Zionist regime began the mutilation and dismemberment of Gaza and its citizens. The present condition of Palestinians is numerically and ethnically worse than the Nakba of 1948. Over 1.2 million Palestinians have been displaced multiple times and more than 36,000 have been martyred, of which 15,000 are children. This does not include the estimated thousands who lay under the rubble of Gaza. Over 80,000 Palestinians have been injured, including more than 12,000 children. In January, Save the Children reported that more than 10 Palestinian children a day on average are losing their limbs, one or both legs, during the Zionist regime's genocide on Gaza. despite being accused of war crimes by the International Court of Justice and asked to enforce a ceasefire, the ethno-national regime operates with the agenda behind mutilation, total annihilation. The mutilation has been deliberately targeted at infrastructure, which started with the bombing of northern Gaza, implying there would be free land on which Zionists could live and even play games. Ashrafa Hospital, its doctors, medical staff and patients were bombed, ensuring that Palestinians do not have the means to recover, and the structurally decimated building cannot be used for shelter. Mutilation has also been targeted at knowledge bases and archives, with the bombing of schools, universities and museums, disabling knowledge production through the burning of archives and books. Mutilation is also strategic, as different kinds of explosives are used to kill starving Palestinians who are drawn out by drones that play the sounds of women and children in distress. Humiliation was an evident precursor of mutilation when over 400 Palestinians were found in mass graves, their bodies showing signs of torture and execution.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. Well, this is Asma. Once more, I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with us, we have Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. Well, maybe for women of today's world, it is a matter of question to know, okay, I'm dealing with too much of a stuff, and there are many things that are changing. Nowadays, even people's faith have been so shaky. Like they, as you can see, in today's world, things are so colorful, and then there are many ideologies, there are many... a manipulation and justification to whatever you believe in. And for a woman who's living in Western culture, that's very difficult to keep up with the old ideologies. And of course, I have to rephrase myself. It's not old, like the ideologies that have been brought up by our religion, that is Islam. It, of course, would never get old, but maybe some people would add some questions into it and then manipulate the whole ideology and then present it in a way that it does not feel like compatible with what's going on in today's world, which is so wrong. So, for this woman of today's world, we search for role models. Of course, we've been talking about Lady Fatima Zahra for so long, and we've already been familiar with her lifestyle, with her ideology, with how we could ponder upon her and reflect her attitudes in our own life. And also we've been talking about Lady Khadija Salamullah Alayha and about Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha. And each of them have been serving as a great role model for us as the modern women and ladies. But then I'm sure there are some other exemplary women out there in the Islamic heritage that we could resort to and reflect their attitudes into our life.
Before I shed light on those role models, I would like to say that patience has no time, age, or I would say patience is not something that was traditional.
Yeah.
You can't say this role model was very, very traditional, show me some nerve. No, the patience then is still a patient that you can practice now.
The problem is not with those ideologies that are always firm and they're always same. No, the problem is with the manipulation and new justifications that the Western modern world tries to bring in order to actually make use of women's energy.
Exactly.
Like they bring up the matter of selfishness. Like, yes. Okay, as a mother who has said that you have to bring up a child, you have your own body, you have your own choice, you have many stuff like this, which us women, like Muslim women, do not believe in these sort of stuff.
Yes, to those mentalities, it's the answer that the patience, the modesty has had no age, no time. Yeah. It has been, modesty has been modesty always, yeah, for all women throughout the history. It still is, and patience in the similar way, and most importantly, the faith. So talking about the role models, today I would like to shed light on Lady Fizza, salamu alayha. So Lady Fizza was a very high-ranking woman. She had this honor of to serve Lady Zahra, salamu alayha. She was brought up in this house of revelation where the, you know, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam would receive the ayahs, the verses of Quran. And she was brought up in this household in such a way that she spoke with Quran even in her ordinary conversation. So let's explore one of the examples. There's this man, Abdullah Mubarak, who says that I lost my caravan during the Hajj journey and I met a woman in the desert. I asked her who she was.
Yeah. Now, actually, this could be a perfect example for those people that when you tell them, okay, you have Lady Fatima Zahra salam Allah alayha to take as a role, they would say, no, she is the daughter of the Prophet. Nobody can reach her piety. And
look
whatsoever.
At her servant. Okay. Look at her maid.
This, yeah, look at her maid. And she is actually a normal, ordinary woman, yes, just like us.
Yeah, so now there are two people. There's this Abdullah Mubarak, a man, and there's Lady Fizza, who have lost their caravan. And he meets her in the desert and says, who you are? And she says, and respond with peace, they will soon come to know. This is the meaning of the verse. So she first expresses her salam to him and then says, you'll soon come to know who I am. Okay, so she's not very answering at the very first test. I greeted her and said, what are you doing here? Again, she answers with a verse of Quran that says, and whoever Allah guides, no one can lead astray. I asked, are you a jinn or a human being? So that's a very obvious question that anyone hearing the Quranic
would come up with. With the lady, when you meet a lady in the desert and then she comes up with these replies, then normally, exactly, naturally,
yes,
and you would come up with that question.
Again, to this, she says that, Ya Bani Adam, khuzu zinatakum. Oh, the children of Adam, take your adornment. That means she says that, I'm the children of Adam. I'm a human being. I'm not a jinn. So, but the way of answering, yeah, she answers with the
verses
of Quran.
She's replying through the verses of the Holy, yes, Book of Quran.
So I'm not someone who does not need food. I'm a, yeah, human being and my body does need food. I gave her food and told her, hurry up. She said, Allah does not burden any human being with a responsibility heavier than he can bear.
Yeah.
So I
in
said,
this case, she's not going to be more hairing up than she already is doing.
Exactly. So I came down and asked her to sit. Ma'am, please, you go ahead, yeah, and please sit down. She said, so she thanks kind of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this.
Bringing this guy up, yes, into the desert in,
exactly,
order to help her.
So he says that the moment we reached the caravan, I said, do you have anyone in the caravan? So she replies with the four different verses.
So this guy came to realize that this woman comes from a religious family in which they already are aware of the Quranic verses and whatsoever.
Man says that she's the maid servant of Lady Zahra, salam alayha, mm-hmm, who has not spoken except for the Quran for 20 years. So she's a woman who served in the Lady Fatima Zahra, salam alayha's house and was nurtured by her. Now, how does this story inspire us today? That's, yeah, actually the main question.
To take Holy Book of Quran as your role model.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
first of all, Lady Fiza Slamlera exemplifies, she inspires the women of today's world to cultivate this knowledge of Quran. It does not mean that you also start answering with the verses of Quran, then definitely people are going to ask you in the same way, are you a jinn or a human being?
Exactly.
So what we mean actually, do Quran, you should attach yourself to Quran as much as possible and contemplate in it. She shows us the faith in Allah, trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the piety, the virtue, the selfless, being a selfless maid. She showed her selfless service, her patience, wisdom, and insight. Well, see, when lost in the desert, Lady Fiza could have panicked and become a little more desperate. You know, instead, she remained very calm.
Yeah. Imagine because she had all those verses in her heart.
Exactly.
So,
now, imagine the situations we are lost. Mm-hmm. Oh, we too. And she answers Abdullah Mubarak his all questions with wisdom and insight without getting panicked, like, you know, seeing a stranger in the desert and all. This is all like what had kept her composed, her faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Of course.
So even despite being asked some questions, Lady Fiza, she being a maid, the most important question I personally derive from her life is that did not let her occupation define her.
Mm-hmm.
See, if there's a maid, she should never think if someone is working, like if someone is there's a woman, she does not have very high ranking occupation, or she's like some maid or some servant or something. Does she let that situation define her? No.
Of course not.
She has expanded her capacity. Mm-hmm. She has expanded her capacity to learn more, to understand more, to teach more. So that's one of the very big lessons that we can learn from her life. And when she was asked to sit behind this man, and she completely refused. She maintained her modesty. She refused to compromise on her values, even in a time when she was supposed to just tremble because she had lost her caravan. She could have said, like, okay, maybe he came as an angel and I have to go. But she remains steadfast. She does not compromise. She just maintains her modesty.
Exactly.
Even she compels the man to get down and then she sits. So that's something. These are very, very important lessons. We also get into the situations like, you know, that of this. These conversations do happen. You do get into a situation where you have this...
Interaction with a stranger.
Yes, and he comes as a helper. It's not like you're already in some trouble situation. You want to come out of it. But here, with the story of Lady Fiza Salman, we understand that there's nothing to panic when you have faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and maybe with your wisdom and insights you can change the opposite person.
And of course this insight and wisdom does not come from nowhere out of blue. No, it comes from her total interaction and immersion with the verses of the Holy Book of Quran.
Exactly.
We have it in the verses of the Holy Book of Quran that those people who have been immersed with the verses of the Holy Book would never get lost and they would never fear anything except Allah. So this is the point of her strength and wisdom. So we have to take this note also into consideration that if she's wise, first of all, she's been going through the learnings and all the narrations that Lady Fatima Az-Zahra Salamu Alayha has given her, has taught her, and also according to the verses of the Holy Book of Quran. Since she has been nurtured by Lady Fatima Az-Zahra Salamu Alayha, then she's going to practice all those verses, not just reciting them like a parrot. You know, because many people would go through recitation just as a parrot, and they did not actually practice whatever they read. But the whole idea of reciting the Holy Book of Quran is to actually practice accordingly.
It teaches the way of life.
Exactly.
Ultimately, there's also one more thing that you can derive from this very conversation they had and until they met the caravan, is that she orders her sons to reward this man, which means be thankful in all the situations.
Exactly.
She was in a very difficult situation, and then this man helped her. She does not, you know, she does not stop not praising him. She explains the verse wherein there's this word trustworthy, strong man, trustworthy man. She tells them reward this man who is strong and trustworthy. So, yeah, what I mean to say is, like, you know, there are verses of Quran that say, when Allah says, when you need me, you ask me in a way that as if, you know, you call upon me in such a way, in a such a desperate situation. But when I give you, as if...
When you reach the shore and when it's just security, then you forget that. You shouldn't be like that.
You shouldn't be like that. And Lady Fizza teaches us that.
Yeah.
She reached the caravan and she could have forgot. She could have been overwhelmed with joy and I don't know, everything. She even tells them, double the reward, multiply the reward.
Exactly. Because man lam yashkur al makhluq lam yashkur al khaliq. Those who do not thank the obedient of Allah would never be able to thank Allah properly. So I guess this was all the time for today's episode. Lady Fizza, of course, is one of the greatest examples to take as role model, but and the things we learned from her are not going to be finished right there, and there is no full stop for these role models. But still, we could learn a lot of stuff from these great exemplary women and the Islamic heritage that we have already. But then this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you just enjoyed it, and I hope we have learned something from Lady Fizza. And this was all. Thank you, Sister Zainab, and thank you, dear listeners. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
Many attacks on the West Bank's healthcare system by Israeli regime forces go unnoticed by the international press. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The electronic intifada wrote, when USA Jabarin gave kisses to his five children as they left for school on May 21st, he did not know it was the last time they would see him alive. Yuseid was a surgeon at Jenin Governmental Hospital in the occupied West Bank. His journey to work that morning took place amid an Israeli regime military raid on the area. Arriving at the hospital, Yuseid got out of his car and began walking toward the hospital. He had only walked a few steps when he was shot and killed by a sniper. Kamal Yuseid's uncle said, "He loved doing good for people and was always smiling. He did not act like a doctor, but as a friend with all his patients." During the same Israeli regime military raid, the paramedic Hazem Masrawa was trying to reach injured people when he encountered gunfire. Masrawa got out of the ambulance and lay down next to it. When he was able to check the ambulance, he found that there was broken glass all around it and that it had been perforated by more than 10 bullets, he said. It was not the first time that Masrawa found himself in extreme danger as he worked. A few months ago, he was taking a wounded person to hospital during another Zionist regime military raid of Jenin. Suddenly, his ambulance came under attack by Israeli regime forces. The forces pointed their weapons at him, making him stop the ambulance. He said, "They threatened to shoot me, took me out of the vehicle, and forced me to open the back door. Then they checked the identity of the injured person, arrested him even though he was bleeding, and fired into the air to force me to leave the place." On December 12th, Fuad Abraha was shot by Israeli regime forces in the center of Jenin. Masrawa was one of the paramedics who came to Abraha's aid and placed him in an ambulance. Masrawa said, "We were trying to reach the hospital as quickly as possible because the injured person suffered from serious wounds in the thigh and severe bleeding. But the troops stopped me and prevented us from reaching the hospital under the pretext that they wanted to check his ID, which he did not have." Although others in the ambulance provided the troops with Abraha's full name and his age, the troops blocked him for more than 10 minutes. The ambulance was then unable to stop the nearby Jenin Governmental Hospital as it was surrounded by the Zionist regime troops. Abraha was brought to a different hospital, but he was already dead by the time the ambulance arrived there. Masrawa said, "I will never forget that day as long as I live." There was considerable coverage in January this year when the Zionist regime forces, disguised as medical staff and civilians, entered Ibn Sina Hospital in Jenin. The Israelis shot dead three patients, one of whom was partially paralyzed. Many other attacks on the West Bank's healthcare system go unnoticed by the international press. Meanwhile, Press TV reported, in a massive abduction campaign, the Zionist regime has taken away 9,600 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and in the occupied East Al-Quds since October, Palestinian rights groups say. It was announced in a joint statement recently by Palestinian Detainees Affairs Commission, the Palestinian Prisoners Club, and Ad-Damir Prison Support and Human Rights Association. According to the statement, this figure includes 325 women, 670 children, and 88 journalists. Furthermore, more than 7,500 orders of the so-called administrative detention have been issued in the besieged Gaza Strip since early October, ranging between new orders and renewals, including orders against children and women. Administrative detention is an inhumane policy exercised by the child-killing regime of Israel, which allows authorities to incarcerate Palestinians indefinitely without pressing formal charges or putting them on trial. Detention campaigns carried out since October 7 are accompanied by escalated crimes and violations such as humiliation, brutal beat, threats against detainees and their families. Besides to vandalism and destruction in detainees' houses, confiscating vehicles, gold and money, in addition to the destruction of infrastructure, especially in the refugee camps of Tulkarm and Jenin, the statement said. According to the document, the corpses of 16 detainees were killed by Israeli troops after October 7, and they are still withheld by Israeli regime authorities. The figure is out of 27 Palestinian abductees who were killed. The statement added that the total number of all Palestinian detainees from all Palestinian territories held in Israeli regime prisons stands at 9,700, including 3,380 under administrative detention. The Zionist regime keeps Palestinian inmates under deplorable conditions without proper hygienic standards. Palestinian inmates have also been subject to systematic torture, harassment, and repression. Early this year, the Palestinian Commission of Detainees Affairs and the Palestinian Prisoner Society jointly said the number of administrative detainees in Israeli prisons is the highest since 1987. Palestinian uprising against the Israeli occupation, surging to 3,291 administrative detainees by the end of last December.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Israel's indiscriminate strikes kill a dozen more Palestinian women and children across Gaza. Palestinian officials say nearly 300 patients have died after the closure of Rafah's crossings. And the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees slams extensive destruction of Gaza school by Israel. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Beginning this, a bulletin with Gaza, where Israel's relentless air and artillery strikes against the devastated Palestinian territory keep claiming more lives.
Stop the war. Enough. We lose our most valuable people. We lose the most valuable people. He was a child. What is his guilt? He is more valuable to me than all Arab people. He was more valuable than the whole world. You are my love.
And the